Have you heard of this thing called LIV Golf? I think it's called LIV. I don't know how you pronounce it. LIV.
No, what's live golf?
LIV Golf. Okay, so you know about the PGA Tour. It's like the main,
Yeah,
it's like
it's
the
that
NFL for
tennis thing.
golf, right? No, golf. So LIV Golf is a competitor to the PGA that just
Oh,
emerged
the
out of
Saudi
nowhere. It's
Arabia thing.
backed. Exactly. It's a Saudi-backed rival. And these guys are basically trying to, it's like they're trying to spin up a new league by brute force. They're investing hundreds of
Which
millions
I
of dollars into. I think
appreciate.
they pledged. Yeah, me too. Big swing. So this is not, this is the opposite of SPS, right? So this is BDE. So basically they put the Saudi Public Investment Fund put in, they pledged $400 million to start the league. I think they've even committed more than that
I
now.
thought they offered
And
Tiger Woods like 500 million or something crazy.
this news came out, yeah, they offered him $800 million and he said no, which is like just kind of an insane thing. So, but they have signed other huge stars. So Phil Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, this guy, Brooks Koepka or whatever, who recently won he won like four majors or whatever. Cameron Smith, who's like this young star, he signed a $100 million deal. Dustin Johnson, $125 million deal. Phil Mickelson, $200 million deal. They offered Tiger and didn't get him yet.
All right, what's going on, dude? How are you?
Fantastic.
So, I have something that I've been thinking about that I've been wanting to talk to you about. I started, have you ever seen that video of Adolf Hitler at the the German Olympics in 1936 when he's watching the Olympics and he's like rocking back and forth? Have you ever seen that?
Bro, you can't be blonde-haired, blue-eyed, and coming on here starting off saying, "Have you ever seen my favorite video of
No.
Hitler?"
No. Have you ever
We're
seen
trying
that
to go
video?
up the charts, bro. We're trying to go up.
Have you ever seen that video of him? Like, so he's like basically there's this video that I saw a couple weeks ago where he's at the Olympics and he's rocking back and forth and he's very clearly on drugs, like some type of coke or something. Like he's on drugs. And I started getting curious about it and I started looking into this and someone in the comments said that there's this really good book called Blitz, so I bought it. It's right here. It's called Blitz, and basically, it's called Blitz: Drugs in the Third Reich. So basically, after reading it, Hitler and a ton of the Nazis, as well as just a ton of Germany, starting in the 1930s, like morphine, heroin, and meth was invented, and they used to think that it was like a miracle drug. Doctors were like, "Take this meth; it makes you feel great." It's like this. It's like a miracle drug. Like you get euphoria. You want to stay up all the time. You'll eat less. It's this wonderful drug. And like it was a legal drug that Bayer, Bayer, the drug company now, they were like selling this shit and they would even put it in chocolates. And there was like a chocolate that you would eat that had a little meth in it and it was like always satisfied or something like that. And like it was so common. And turns out Hitler was a junkie. He was getting injected with meth for years, and that's one of the reasons why, like when they were getting bombed the very last minute, he was like, "Oh no, we're doing great," because he had like these like he was like hallucinating, he had like thoughts of grandeur, typical meth shit. And I started thinking about this: what other stuff in history was supposed to be one way and be happening like one time, but turns out it was for a totally other reason? And I started looking into it. So, for example, Henry VIII, he was the ki have you know what Protestants are?
No, I've
That's
heard that word a thousand times.
I knew you
Couldn't tell
wouldn't
you what it
know,
is.
dude. Protestants,
Protagonist?
no. So like, there's like the Catholics, and then there's the Protestants. It's basically like if you're like an evangelical Christian, if you're a Baptist, if you're like all these other different types of Christian religions, you're probably a Protestant. Or maybe by definition, you are. Anyway, someone came up with it, like Martin Luther came up with it, and in the 1500s, the King of England, he basically like had like eight divorces because he couldn't have a kid. Like it was him. He was infertile, and the Pope was like, "Hey, you can't have these divorces anymore. This is bullshit." And he's like, "No, fuck that. Then we're gonna switch to Protestant because that allows like me to get a divorce and I can have all these kids." And so now like there's a billion Protestants in the world because he just turns out like wanted a divorce. And then like there's this story that you ever know how Barcelona people say Barcelona really funny, like
With a
Barcelona.
lisp,
Yeah, there's like this urban myth that the king of Spain had a lisp, and someone's like, "Hey, you know it's pronounced Barcelona," and he goes, "No, from now on it's Barcelona." because, you know, that's just how I say it. That's just
my first million.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, Mike Tyson ruled the world. And just thinking about like what other stuff did we think that was going to be like, you know, was for this like grand reason, but it was really just like, you know, like the guy's dad said something like George Bush invading, like, you know, looking for weapons of mass destruction because like his dad was like, you know, you're not strong like your brother. And like,
because he couldn't find the remote one time. Now yeah. He's got this complex.
Or he had this like leftover, like mission accomplished banner. He's like, well, we got to do something with it. You know, like what else in history has been done just for like totally the opposite reason? All right. A quick message from our sponsor, which is, of course, HubSpot. Now, look, growing a business is tough, and it's tough because a lot of times you have to duct tape a ton of software together to make it work. I've been there, and it's a pain in the butt. You have this thing connecting to that thing, and the two things that are being connected, one of them breaks, or the thing connecting them doesn't work, and it's a mess. You have all these moving parts, and it's just a pain in the butt because you don't know where the single source of truth is. And that's where HubSpot's customer platform comes into play. Finally, you've got this single source of truth where everything is organized and tracked in one place. For example, if you have customers emailing you, they've got really easy ways to see who on your team is replying to which customer, what they're saying, and things like that. And you can track it all in one place. They also have a lot of AI-supported stuff, which means that you can automatically know which type of messaging you need to send to that type of customer. And yes, it sounds natural, like a real person. I actually use it. I use it with my company, Hampton, and it works wonderfully. And when leads come in, you know which channel they came through, you know who's going to follow up with them, and it's all seamless and easy. So if you're interested, it's simple. Go to HubSpot.com and check it out and see how you can use it to grow your business.
I don't know, but I bet there's so much. Like, I think about this with food all the time when I see, people are like, oh, you know, that the active ingredient in Advil or aspirin comes from this, like, oak tree and, like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, but how did we figure that out? Like, who was just gnawing on trees and was like, you know, this one, I had a headache earlier and now I don't have it anymore, right? Like, all foods, what's like, oh, this one kills you, this one's good for you. It's like, okay, but like, you know, who were the testers? Who was figuring this out along the way? I actually think that was probably, like, what's the most fun time to be alive was then, when no one knew anything about anything. Like, you didn't know what was food and what was not food. Like, how much just random soil has been eaten by somebody being like, this has to be food. And then somebody else is like, you know, sees a chicken running by. He's like, no, I think under that under those feathers, there's something there.
Dude, there's all types of good stories like that.
And I never research it.
So, like, have you heard about, like, the invention of LSD?
No.
The guy, it was a European doctor. He was trying to, like...
He was a doctor, right?
Yeah, he was just trying to make, like, I forget what it was, but some type of antibiotic, like, just something normal. And he got a little bit of the shit in his skin. Like, he, like, touched it funny. And he was like, oh, my God, this is awesome. And then he, like, starts tinkering with it even more. And he goes, all right, let's try this. And he gives himself a huge dose. And he starts running home on his bicycle. He's like, nothing's happening. Like, this didn't work. And then all of a sudden, it hits him. And he, like, has the biggest trip of his life. And then he, like, you know, it changes everything.
Yeah, I feel like penicillin, there's a whole bunch of drugs that were discovered by accident for sure. I don't know where you want to go with this topic, but
I don't want to go anywhere. I just thought it was interesting. This book, like, I just been reading this book about drugs and like the Nazis, and I was like, it's crazy. Like, the book says that they at the time in the 30s and 40s when World War II was happening, that something like 60% of German doctors were addicted to morphine, and they are the ones, like, you know, voting on what the laws were going to be around, you know, how these controlled substances are handled. It's crazy. It changed my perspective. Well, I guess it didn't change my perspective, but you know what I mean? It's just like an interesting read.
Let me tell you an interesting story. Have you heard about this math teacher in Florida?
No, no.
These stories can go one of two ways.
Yeah. Yeah. The dog, was he on Dog the Bounty Hunter? I mean, this could go a bunch of different ways. Yeah. Is there a funny, like, viral video of him in a 7-Eleven?
No. So get this. So Brandon was telling me about this. This is kind of amazing. So there's this guy. Okay. So, you know, like, there's like kind of like school competitions, whether it's spelling bee or math competitions or whatever. So there's this math competition. And there's this kind of strange thing going on where one small school, it's not a private school, has won like 15 out of the last 17 of these math competitions. And people were like, God, what is going on at like Buchholz High School? And the story is kind of amazing. So there's this guy, Will Fraser. He starts as a banker on Wall Street. And he's doing like bond trading or something like that. And the guys, you know, this is like in the 80s. He's like, you know, this is the heyday of where, you know, you've ever read those books like Liar's Poker and things like that. It's like the heyday of Wall Street. People are making tons of money. He retires by 27. So he's made a bunch of money. He's like, dude, this is too stressful of a lifestyle.
How much did he make?
I don't want to do this anymore. I don't know exactly how much he made, but enough to retire at 27. So let's assume it's, you know, like I would say 10 million at least.
Okay.
That's my guess. So he buys a Ferrari. He drives down to Florida. He's like just dreaming of like a slower, calmer life. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to go to Florida. Bought this Ferrari. I'm going to just play a bunch of golf, play a bunch of basketball, and I'm just going to hang out.
Do Ferrari shit. He does that. Yeah.
For a decade, he's, you know, that guy you see on like Tuesday at 1 p.m. just like hanging out at the park. And you're just like, how do you know? You don't have a job? Like, what's going on? He's that guy. And he does it for 10 years. No income. 10 years. He's just chilling. And he plays a bunch of golf. And along the way, he's sort of like, yeah, you know what? Like, I'm feeling a little aimless. Don't have a great, you know, purpose in my life at this point. So he's like, he reaches out to a local high school. And he's like, hey, can I teach golf over there? And they're like, ah, sure. And he comes over and teaches golf. He's like, I like teaching, actually. Even on Wall Street, I liked teaching the young guys. So he's like, what else? Can I teach like a finance class? You know, I'm a former Wall Street guy, made it big, retired. Can I teach a finance? They're like, no, we don't have finance, but you can become a math teacher if you want. And he's like, all right, I'll do it. And so he goes and he becomes a math teacher. And he walks in on day one and he's like, listen, let me tell you this right now. I don't need this job. You guys give me any shit? This will be my last day. And they're like, okay, you know, respect. And so he gets one day, he's like checking his mailbox as a teacher and he sees this math competition coming up. He's like, oh, like, that's cool. Let's try this. So he enters into the math competition. They go there and they get smoked. They get fifth out of sixth place. So they're second to last. And he's like, dude, I couldn't even solve some of these problems. Like, this was hard. But like the switch got flipped. The competitive switch in him gets flipped. And he's just like, actually, I liked that competition. I missed the competition of Wall Street, where it was just like completely dog eat dog and you're like high intensity. And so he decides to do it again and again and again. And he goes and they get fifth the next time. Then they get third. And so on and so forth. And he basically decides that we are going to dominate these competitions. And that's exactly what's happening.
Dude, isn't that
now
the best?
Now they've won 15 out of 17.
The 15 out of 17. Isn't that the best when someone just like sees like a small opportunity and they're like, no one takes this as seriously as we're going to take this. Let's do it. You know what I mean? I love
and
that.
That's exactly what
just
happened.
Like that cheerleading movie that we watched on Netflix. That it's like they just like cheer. Take it. Yeah, they take it to the highest
that one
degree.
I discovered.
Yeah, the one that you made popular.
Yeah. So people are like, dude, what's your secret? What are you doing differently? Blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, I just took a different level of intensity. He's like, it's just insane hard work. He goes, you know, average math teacher gets 72 hours of classroom time with their students per semester. And then they hope that after school, some of those kids come and they learn for an hour, you know, once a week or whatever. That's what they're putting in. He goes, oh, I just switched it. First, I took all the good math kids. I put them in the same class, kind of like almost like, you know, like blended of age. But like, he's like, I put all the best people in the same class so they would compete with each other. Then we used our class time to start preparing for these competitions. Then I started creating summer camps where we could get 80 hours in 4 weeks. So the equivalent of a full semester of teaching in this high intensity thing. He's like, and I just developed a program because they're like, are you the best at math? He's like, no, I don't even teach the advanced math stuff. Like one of my former students teaches like the hard stuff. I just build the program. He's like, I put the high school students with the middle school students. And that because the middle school students sort of idolize the high schoolers. They teach down and then the middle schoolers rise up. He's like, so I built this program where one alumni, basically like the older kids teach the younger kids teach the even younger kids. And we just put in way more time. He's like, then I started scouting. Like this is like, you know, Alabama football. So he'll go and he'll look at the scores of other schools. And he'll find the high-performing kids and he'll recruit them to his
That's
program.
That's crazy.
And then the reputation got built where they started winning. So now parents are coming inbound and being like, please take my kid. And he's like, we only have so many spots. I'm sorry. And so he's built this like talent pipeline. And not only that, the talent pipeline goes even further. Now companies like McKinsey and the big banks, Wall Street, They come recruit from his high school, the big schools, Ivy Leagues,
for interns
come
and
recruit
shit, yeah.
from his high school because they want his students now. So he built like a platform for where they can go, which helps him recruit even better students. And so
where'd you see
like,
this
when
story?
COVID happened? What's that?
Where'd you read this?
It's just like, I think that, so it's been in just like the local Florida news for a while. And then I saw something.
Yeah, but what were you doing?
Brandon sent me an article.
Who's Brandon?
No, he sent this article from the Wall Street Journal or something. Uh-huh. It was like paywall. So I only got the first paragraph. I'm too cheap to pay for it. But I was like, oh, what's the story? And then I found all these local Florida papers that had the rest. And so they said like during COVID, they were like, oh, you got to teach remotely. And he's just like, oh, okay. Yeah, we're going to downgrade the intensity. He's like, hell no, I resign. And then he went to a church, rented out the church. And was like, hey, if you guys want to come and train here, we could do this. And 140 kids went and trained daily in his church during COVID when everybody else was had to lower their intensity. He ratcheted
how,
it
how
up.
Old is this guy now?
So now he's like in his 60s. And so he's been doing this now for like, you know, a number of years. So he was basically 27. He took 10 years off. So he's closer to 40, 10, 11 years off. And then basically from 40 to 60, he's just been dominating this one thing. Isn't this incredible?
This is incredible. This is incredible. I think there's a few things. One, just the intensity. Number two, I think sometimes if you pick, like a lot of people, including me, we want to move to San Francisco, New York, LA, and try to become like a medium-sized fish in a big pond. I think there's so much to be said about being the best or a big fish in a little pond. And like you can make a name for yourself totally. And have a way better life. Like this random dude is having so much more impact by creating being like the guy for like this very small math contest versus, you know, a rich, he's probably way more fulfilled than being just like another $100 million banker.
Dude, I want to get diagnosed with a bad case of SPS. I want small pond syndrome. And like I am a huge believer in this. Dude, I lived in Houston in high school. And Houston, I went to a big public school, 5,000 kids, and kids from all over Houston. And basically, my life was basketball. I loved basketball. And I remember a game in ninth grade, the varsity coach, I was on the ninth grade team, and I, you know, the goal would be to someday be on varsity. The varsity coach watching our game, and for some reason, I think I scored like, I had like two threes to start the game. And then all of a sudden, the most athletic kid on their team decided like, nah, this guy's not going to like see the hoop again. And he starts picking me up full court. Basically, like from the moment I can move, this guy's like in my shirt. And, you know, and I literally can't get by this guy. Like I'm trying to go left. I'm trying to go right. I cannot get by this guy. And I don't know what to do. And I'm just basically like getting frazzled. So coach calls timeout. The coach calls timeout. The varsity coach walks into the huddle. And I think he's going to give me this like epic advice, maybe like that varsity advice. How am I supposed to get by this guy? And he just goes, you will never play varsity basketball.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what? Thanks, Coach Hollingsworth. And he's just like, if you can't handle this guy, you will never like, he's like, I thought you might be. And now I see no as like some motivational thing.
And then he just gave you a wedgie and walked away.
Exactly.
Got fucking nerd.
So hard. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, hey, I'd like to report a bully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is there a checkbox for faculty? but he was right. And in the Houston pond, I was nowhere near athletic enough to be whatever. Now, luckily, my parents, my dad gets a job in Beijing. We moved to China in the 10th grade. I go to China. First day, I start playing basketball.
Autographs.
These kids don't get protein yeah. over there. These kids don't get protein. Everybody's scrawny. I'm blowing by everybody. Varsity coach walks over. He's just like, hey, what's your name? I end up being captain of the varsity team. You know, I got a girlfriend. Like my life changed for the better. Like everything got better because I caught SPS. I got small pond syndrome. And I was able to go be a varsity player over there, captain of the team.
The captain of a football team in rural Alabama with 100 students. They live the life. Screw the big city. Exactly. Live that life. You know what I'm saying?
And there was a part of me, a foggy part of my memory that remembered like, You ain't shit. You ain't shit. You ain't shit.
Do the man like, thing and squash that down.
It quickly got washed away.
Yeah.
It quickly got washed away. And like, those I forgot. Feelings. And then I thought, it became like, you're the shit. You're the shit. You're the shit. And that's what you want to do in life. This guy's doing it right. I actually have this dream too. I was like, I just kind of want to retire and coach high school basketball. Like, I think that would just be a lot of fun. And yeah, you know, this small pond thing, I think we're onto something.
I've thought about this for a long time. I thought about moving back to St. Louis for a minute, but my wife wasn't down. But I was like, dude, I could just be the man here. You know, I could buy $1 million house and it would make the news. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
$1 million in San Francisco or New York is a studio. But I was like, it would be one of the biggest purchases of the quarter. I would make the news. It would be awesome. But then I realized I don't want to do that. Yeah, I don't want to do that. Bro,
what else you got? I have straight fire today. If you want, want more,
all right, I've got fire too. I think. Did you see what I have in there?
No, I don't even have the thing open.
Oh well, fuck. You could screw.
Give me one.
Well, okay. So I spoke to like a bunch of different companies this week, and they gave me all their revenue, all their profit, and a few of them are interesting. And I could just like bullet point and quickly go through a few of them. You want to do that?
By the way, explain why does somebody just give you all the revenue and give you all the profit, as you say? Because it sounds like A, unrealistic, and B, like you sort of like tricked them, but that's not the case.
No, I've got this like community that I'm running that I'm not going to talk about yet, but it's like a CEO community. And when they join, they tell me all types of interesting information so we can place them in the right group. And I messaged 8 of them. And I said, hey, can I talk about you on the pod? And can you answer these questions? And am I allowed to reveal all of your information? Well, am I allowed to reveal the information that you gave me? And they said, yeah, sure. So that's how I got it. So nothing like crazy. Which one you want to do? All right. I got a couple of them, actually.
Give me the most interesting one first.
Let's do... okay. Well, here's one that's actually not on... I don't even think I put it on here. But have you ever seen those pedal taverns in... like Nashville and Denver? It's like the bars that you like pedal with like a, they're honestly pretty obnoxious, but you know what I'm talking about?
No, pedal what? What do you,
it's called a pedal tavern. So basically,
like, is it a bus? Like a,
you've
moving?
Never seen, I guess you don't like leave the suburbs of San Francisco, but in a lot of other cities, Denver, Austin, Nashville, like these like style cities, there's these things called pedal taverns. They kind of look like, imagine a bar in the middle, and there's 8 people sitting on one side and 8 people sit on the other side. Now imagine that being on top of a 4-wheeled platform, and you're pedaling that platform while you're drinking booze. You've never heard of that?
But you're outdoors, right?
You're outdoors on the street.
So yeah, it's like some party thing. Yeah, gotcha.
The guy who created one of the first ones is in the group, and his name's Pete. And his business he bootstrapped it from nothing, just out of school. It's getting close to $8 million a year in revenue. And just the pedal taverns do about $5 million a year in sales. Quite profitable. And they're using the profits to buy the real estate that their pedal taverns stay in overnight. That's a pretty interesting business. Let's see. Another one is, have you heard of... let's find another one. Have you heard of... you probably never heard of this. So here's an interesting one. There's this business called The Peak. It's ran by this guy named Brett. So it's a daily newsletter. So it's just like The Hustle, Morning Brew, whatever. Mostly bootstrapped, only, and it's in Canada. And so every day it gives you the news you need to know about Canada, Canadian news. Only a team of 10, 90,000 newsletter subscribers, not that much, and doing about $3 million in revenue with $1 million in profit. Pretty good business. A small team of 10, 90,000 subscribers, 53% open rate, 67,000 monthly podcast listeners. The guys were like kind of good writers, but not really that good. And they just started like writing and cold emailing people and hiring writers. And after 2 or 3 years, it's already at about $2 or $3 million in revenue.
So what are they doing differently? Because that's more revenue per subscriber than most, I think.
So,
is that right?
Yeah, it's pretty good. But basically, they just said that in Canada, like there's not as many publications and B2B advertisers, software companies, they don't have that many places to advertise. And so these guys have just done a really good job of getting the banks, the telecommunication companies, B2B software companies, all these like high-end enterprise companies to advertise with them.
Gotcha. That's pretty good. Okay.
We'll do one more.
I want to tell you about a company.
Oh, fine. You can go.
Okay. Okay. I want to tell you about a company that you may have heard of. Have you heard of this thing called LIV Golf? I think it's called LIV. I don't know how you pronounce it. L-I-V.
Or live? Wait, L-I-V?
Yeah, just L-I-V.
No, what's LIV Golf?
LIV Golf. Okay, so you know about the PGA Tour. It's like the main, yeah, it's like
that,
the NFL
tennis
for golf,
thing.
Right? No, golf. So LIV Golf is a competitor to the PGA that just emerged out of
the Saudi
nowhere.
Arabia thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, it's a Saudi-backed rival. And these guys are basically trying to, it's like they're trying to spin up a new league by brute force. They're investing hundreds of millions
of
dollars.
Which I appreciate.
I think they pledged. Yeah, yeah, me too. Big swing. So this is not, yeah, this is the opposite of SPS, right? Yeah. So this is BDE.
Yeah.
So basically they put, the Saudi Public Investment Fund put in, they pledged $400 million to start the league. I think they've even committed more than that now.
I thought they offered Tiger Woods like $500 million or something crazy.
News came out, yeah, they offered him $800 million and he said no, which is like just kind of an insane thing. So, but they have signed other huge stars. So Phil Mickelson, you know, Dustin Johnson, this guy, you know, Brooks Koepka or whatever, who recently won he won like four majors or whatever. Cameron Smith, who's like this young star, he signed a $100 million deal. Dustin Johnson, $125 million deal. Phil Mickelson, $200 million deal. They offered Tiger and didn't get him yet, but
and Phil can only be on, it can only be on LIV and not PGA.
Exactly. So it's a competitive thing. So PGA is like, there's like, I don't know, 60 events a year or whatever. And then there's like four majors. What these guys are doing is like, there's eight events and they all matter. They're going for more of like the NFL model versus baseball, right? Baseball has almost 200 games a year and, you know, they don't really matter, but there's sort of always something on. Whereas the NFL is like, there's like 17 Sundays or 18 Sundays and like each one is going to matter. So that's what these guys are trying to do with the golf model. And to like put this into context, you know, Tiger Woods, you know, has earned $121 million in all of his PGA winnings, like over time. You know, obviously he makes more through sponsors and you know, other sort of like paid events and things like that. But just from the PGA, his lifetime, I think earnings are $121 million. So LIV is coming out strong and basically giving these guys like Tiger Woods lifetime money as a guaranteed contract. Instead of the way the PGA works is it's like, there's a prize pool for every tournament. There's $9 million for every tournament. The winner gets three. Everybody else gets like a piece, depending on how you finished. And they just do that over and over and over again. And so they do 48 events a year. And so LIV comes in and they basically are giving guaranteed money away instead of saying you have to win in order to be there. And so PGA makes like $1.5 billion.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
In revenue,
1.5, a little over 1.5.
And, wow, you know, 85% of that is like their tournaments and the media rights and ads and all that stuff that comes from that. They have like a 9-year, they're in year one of a 9-year contract. And then Mr. Steal Your Girl comes in and is starting to just take these stars away and basically is trying to, you know, compete with them. They also have like prize money as well. And so they need, you know, they would need to generate like $1 billion as well to sort of like have like a similar economics.
But what's the play here? Do like Middle Easterns watch a lot of golf? Is that the shtick? Is like this?
No, I don't know if that's why. Like maybe, like, you know, there's like that weird thing where like Russia really loves like women's basketball. I don't know if you know this.
No.
But, like, if you're a great women's basketball player, you play college in the United States, then you try to make it to the WNBA, and the WNBA pays you basically nothing. Like, you know, you'll make like 70, 80K a year.
Yeah, like a shoe salesman salary.
And then you'll get like 300, 400K for playing the off season in Russia.
Yeah.
And everyone's, wow, like, why does Russia care this much about women's basketball? Like nobody asks questions. And like, yeah, it's a little bit, whatever. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but that's like, you know, they disproportionately like that sport. And so maybe there is something in Saudi Arabia for this, or it's just, they have a huge amount of money and they see the business opportunity where PGA basically had a monopoly on this. And if you can create a successful sports league, these are worth billions and billions of dollars. Like, we both love the UFC. UFC sold for, I think, $4.2 billion, which in my opinion is
under,
is now like very low, yeah, undervalued for where it is. And that's like, the UFC is like fringe compared to NBA, NFL, like these major leagues.
What's more popular, golf or UFC? Golf, right?
I think golf is not more popular, but it generates more revenue.
But what's more lame?
Because it's like sort of the wealthy one. Who beats up who? A golfer with their club or a UFC fighter with his hands?
Dude, I fucking hate golf. I hate golf. I cannot stand golf. Dude, golf's not a sport. Golf's an activity.
Answer this honestly. How much of your thinking at the end of the day boils down to who could beat up who?
Most. Most. I think because that's like something that we're all like we're all afraid of. Like the guy who at the end of the day is like, oh, I can kill anyone in this room with my bare hands. He is, you know, he's the true dog, you know, he has nothing to fear.
Somebody said this once. I was reading like a NFL scouting report. It's like there was a draft. There's four quarterbacks. They're all like top prospects. It's like, who's going to go number one? Who's number two? And the guy who does like the draft, he said this line that I thought was so badass. He goes, if they were all on vacation and going for a road, you know, they're walking out to go to the car, they would all throw the keys to Mark. Like they would check the keys to Mark's driving, and it was like this like alpha male thing, and I was just like, what was this analogy and why did I love it so much? Like if you just said this, if it was like, hey, Elon, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Bill Gates go out to dinner,
who's paying,
who's picking up the check?
Yeah.
Who ordered the Uber?
Yeah.
Because none of these guys are driving.
Do you, when you're in a room, like at a restaurant,
who sits aisle?
What percentage of the time when you're at a restaurant do you look around and be like, whose ass can I kick and whose can I not?
Zero.
Really? 0%.
But I know that you do, which is why I asked you this question, because it's hilarious.
You don't think about that?
0% of the time.
Dude, I cannot stand golf. Any sport that you wear khaki pants to like play, it's not a sport. That's not a sport. It's an activity. It's a hobby. It's checkers, but it's not, you know. Like
it's barely a job if you have to wear khakis. It's barely a job.
Yeah. Like
sport is out of the question.
Khakis and a collared shirt. That's not a sport. Like you don't sweat. It's an activity. It's a hobby. This is amazing though. I don't like, let's get rid of the Saudi Arabia thing. I think it's pretty cool. But if you're Phil Mickelson and you have fuck you money hardcore, and Saudi Arabia, who has, you know, a lot of human rights issues, offers you this, what do you do? Do you take it or not? So you double your net worth if you're him.
So I think you can't take it alone in a vacuum, because you're not trying to go sit on an island doing nothing by yourself and like lose all your relevance. You lose your future earnings if you do that. But what I do is I say to them, look, I'm in if you can go get 40% of this list to join. And you could tell them that fills in if you're in. And I would basically say, you need to sweep a critical mass of us so that this is relevant, that this is considered the top class. I'm not going to go play in the B league or the D league by doing this. And I would tell them that. And I would say, I'll do it. You're going to have to cut the fattest check of your life. And you got to go get 40% of this list.
So there's a price that you would take for sure.
Oh, of course. Of course. If you know, if somebody said, hey, you got to go do this podcast on Android. And I'd be like, is there a podcast player on Google? And they'd be like, yeah. We're putting a lot of investment into it. I'd be like, all right, I'll do that. I'll take this podcast to SoundCloud. I'll take it to the Google Play Store. But I'm going to need to see $7.5 million. That's what I would say about this podcast. I would move this podcast for $7.5 million. That is my price.
There's a price to pay to be a whore. I'm down. But,
So we actually were going to do this. So at one point in time, I had a startup that was based on like streaming video games. And Twitch was the like 900-pound gorilla in the room that was like, it was the big streaming platform. And we were just like, we were trying to build a tool that worked on top of Twitch. Like streamers could use it when they use Twitch. And it was working. And every day we'd come into work and we'd work really hard on this tool. But like, there was definitely a part of us that was like, dude, how did we end up here? We're making this like tool for Twitch streamers that like is free, and then we're hoping that we can like, after they all use it, then we might be able to monetize this other way. We're just like this guppy in this like in the ecosystem of this food chain. We're like that little fish that like swims in front of the whale's nose, like whatever that thing is called. Like we're that. And I was like, I looked at Furkan, I was like, man, don't you just want to be the whale? And he's like, I just so badly want to be the whale. And I'm like, yeah. So what can we do? We went to the room, we just whiteboarded. We're like, how would you like compete with Twitch itself? How would you just beat Twitch? And I was like, just look at the numbers. So we like ran the numbers. We're like, Twitch has this insane power law where you can see that the top, you know, X hundred streamers, if you take the top 300 streamers, they basically make up all the viewership, all the meaningful viewership. Like, you know, I don't remember what the exact ratios were at the time, but like any power law, it's like, you know, the top 1% or whatever make up a very significant portion of the viewership. So let's just make up some numbers. Let's say the top 300 made up 50% of the viewers at any given time. I was like, so Twitch sold for $1 billion like a decade ago or whatever, you know, 7 years ago. It's probably worth $5-7 billion now. You're saying that if we could take, you know, half of that half, if we can get to a quarter of that, we'd be worth $1 billion. You know, we might have the equivalent, 25% of the traffic, we'd be worth, you know, a quarter of what they're worth, which is like $1 billion today. How much money would it take for us to throw at those people, right? Go get 25% of that through top 300. How much money would it take for us to go throw at them to be like, come join our new thing? And we like game theory the whole thing out. We're like, all right, this guy makes this much today. We basically need to offer him like 10 times what he's making today.
How much to come move? How much do some of these guys make just on Twitch?
So shortly after that, the contracts exploded. But like at that time, the top guys were making like single digit millions per year off Twitch. So like, let's call it between 1 and 5 million. Plus there's some endorsements you don't really know how to track. And you know, they sell some amount of t-shirts. It's hard to know. And then it sort of exploded. Guys started signing like, you know, $10, $20 million deals, but they're like multi-year deals, 3 year deals or something like that. So, you know, they're making 6 million guaranteed or something like that. 5 million guaranteed, 10 million guaranteed. So, that was like the kind of like what our estimates were for the very, very top guys. We thought, okay, so how much would we need? And it's like, we basically did the math and we're like, okay, I think you need, I don't remember what the number was today, but let's call it, let's just pretend it was 150 million. We need $150 million to go throw at them. But it's like, if I told you, you could go raise $150 million.
And you're saying you needed $150 million in order to pay the streamers and tell them, bail on Twitch, come to our platform. And when you come to our platform, you're going to bring your audience and we're going to make all this money eventually through other people coming.
You get this much guaranteed. All you have to do is just continue to stream and you have to promote it in this way and let us promote you.
Can I make a prediction?
We're going to need $5 million to build this platform.
My prediction is that would never work. I don't think that works.
Okay, so tell me why. I'll tell you how it, obviously it didn't happen, so you know, you're partly right.
I think it could.
Tell me why you think.
Well, I know that you didn't really try to do this, but, or I don't know, in earnest, I don't know if you didn't raise $150 million. I think maybe the PGA Tour could work, maybe. But doing this for consumers, you need to have like a brand and you need to have some magic about it. It's kind of like, you know, even if you put all of like the resources into creating a boy band, like sometimes that shit just don't work. Even though like everything on paper, it's like, well, we got the blonde hair kid, we got the mixed race kid, we got the dancer, we got the singer. Right. Like on paper, this checks out. You know, like this should work. You know what I mean? We should be popular in Korea by this point. And it's just there's just no magic, right? It shit just happens. And then like you have some like, you know, kid who just like sings a funny song and makes a joke about like wearing a cowboy hat and he gets hugely famous, like Lil Nas X or something. Shit just happens. Right. And I think that there's like a bit of magic that probably would be missing out because with consumers, it's quite challenging to like grab their attention. It's like getting a cat to play with something. It just, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Right. So I do think that's part of it, but there have been instances where people have thrown money at the problem and it actually worked, right? For every Quibi, where you just raise a bunch of money, you go try to do the thing, it doesn't work. For every one of the, or every 10 of those, there's one where you're like, no, actually, they did kind of just brute force their way in. I don't know if you remember this, but when TikTok first launched, TikTok was lame as hell, dude. TikTok was lame as hell. It was pigeonholed as like the lame version of Musical.ly, which was a pretty lame thing. It was like 12-year-olds lip syncing videos. And now TikTok is huge. And one thing that happened in between, I remember meeting a guy and he was like, yeah, you know, TikTok is going to spend $1 billion marketing the app. Cause I was like, dude, there's billboards in San Francisco, like at bus stops to download TikTok. I was like, do they really think this is going to work? And we had an intern, not an intern, really, like a kind of just like a junior guy working for us. He was in ninth grade and he worked at our company. And I was like, he started mentioning TikTok. And I was like, is TikTok actually a thing? He's like, Yeah, you know, we just kept hearing about it, kept hearing about it. And then they started just paying all of the top YouTubers and Vine people to just make TikToks. And like,
it worked.
You know, eventually it just worked. Like, it's like, we all think it's lame, but like, we all kind of started to use it. And then sure enough, the lame thing fell away too, right, by the end of it. And it like, you know, became like a pretty mainstream thing. Like, TikTok really did brute force their way. Now, they did a bunch of other things, right? Good product, great algorithm. They did a bunch of other things, right? I'm not saying they didn't do that. But it's not like they started with this like brand love and authenticity and like loyalty and things like that. So let me tell you how this Twitch thing played out. So I had a hunch that you might be right. So I approached Discord and I said, hey, Discord, do you want to buy us? And they're like, maybe. Who are you? And like, what do you want to do? What do you do? And I was like, oh, we do this thing today. But here's what we would do with Discord. We would help you compete with Twitch. You have brand love. Like, Discord is one of the most loved brands in gaming. It's like, you have brand love. But you don't do this today, we will build the platform and like we can use this strategy to do this. And they were like, well, okay, this is kind of like a crazy big pivot idea. Like, respect the audacity.
Who did you email? What role?
I don't know. CEO.
And you said, hey, CEO, I'm Sean. This is what I do. Can I come to your office and pitch you? And then you went to the office and told them that, or you told them this all?
Exactly. Exactly.
Why did he take your meeting?
And he, at the end of it, his take was basically like, we will acquire you if you want. I don't know if we'll pay the most. So, you know, that's, I don't know if the deal will happen. And I don't know if we would do this, but the fact that you can come in here and whiteboard this on a wall makes me want you to like come here and do things. And like, that was his like takeaway.
That's the biggest bullshit artist thing I've ever heard of. And you almost pulled it off. What was the guy like?
He's amazing.
He's a young guy, right? Just like a young nerdy dude.
Jason Citron. Yeah. I was like, I never met Zuck, but I was like, the way he talked about their product, their strategy, and like his like confidence, his like quiet, nerdy confidence. I was like, I don't want to compete with this guy. And I see why they've kicked everyone's ass. Like, this is like, this guy's really smart and just really like has a point of view about the way this needs to go. And like, it's just simple. It's understandable. It's different.
Why do you think he took your meeting?
I just feel like he's going to execute on that. I think I had gotten a warm intro through his investor, his lead investor. I told his lead investor, hey, we're thinking about selling. But I went to him and I was like, hey, we're thinking about selling. Would you do this deal or not? And he was like, well, you should first talk to the Discord guys. And I was like, great. You know, that's exactly what I was hoping for, you know, because I just need to create a bidding war of some kind to get the, you know, best deal possible. So can you make that intro? So he just emailed him and was like, you guys should meet. Or like, you know, here's his email. He's like, I think he warm intro. You should meet. And I just said, hey, I'd love to come by the office today and like, you know, 40 minutes, I'll sketch out what I have in mind. And like, you know, you can decide
if I'm
just nuts or if I'm genius or I'm nuts, and you can decide for yourself.
But he something respected
like
it.
I don't know what I said. Yeah. He was just like, you know, would you like to come like be one of the like C-suite type people? Cause I don't think we're going to do that plan that you outlined, but I like you, you know,
which role?
This is like, you know, there's not, I don't, we didn't get that.
Dude, this is like, how,
you know, would you come be a leader?
Everyone needs the confidence of a Sean Puri. This is a great story. This is proof that you can just create shit out of thin air.
Value.
Yeah, you can create value out of thin air.
I always say this, like, at my last startup, the best thing I did ultimately in that company was I did right by the team and the shareholders of, like, at the end, I put my best foot forward to try to get us the most value we could. That was, like, you know, of all the things I did, that was the best one. And like, I tried to do many other things well. I tried to find product market fit, tried to scale, tried to hire a great team. And I did some of those okay, some of those poorly. The one thing I did great was this process. Let me finish the story here. So I'm like, okay, these guys don't want to do it, but maybe we could still do it. And so we start trying to set up a meeting. And I realized pretty quickly, you have to do this as one, you have to do this as like a coup. Cause it's kind of like a rebellion. And I was like, we need to do two things. We need to wait till people are pissed off about something that Twitch does, which big companies will shoot themselves in the foot. They'll come out with policies. They'll make some statement. They'll change some feature. They'll change the revenue split and people will get annoyed. I was like, so we need to capitalize on that. And then secondly, we need to get everybody all at once. You know, that movie that's out that people like, everything, everywhere, all at once. That's how, I was like, that's how we need to do this. We can't just slowly negotiate one by one. It won't feel like there's enough momentum. And so I was like, we need to do this at Twitch's big conference where all the streamers will go to, all the big streamers go. Cause most big streamers, they don't leave their house. They're like me, but they actually have like, you know, they're actually, you know, rich and famous from their streaming, but they can't leave their room. It's like their job. And so they go on vacation very little. They take very few days off. The one thing they do is they often go to TwitchCon cause they can meet their fans and it's the big event. So I was like, we need to do like a dinner the day before, the day of war, the day after the conference, probably the day before. And I was like, you know, this might be the worst time because they're going to be up in, you know, the Twitch kind of like ecosystem, but it's the only time we can get them all in the same room. I was like, and we'll lay out our case, which is basically, look, you guys are going to make stupid money. If you all are in, there's no risk to any of you individually because if you're all there, this will actually work. And see, like, you don't have to play by Twitch's rules anymore. Like, you have a, you know, say in this thing.
I can't find this client info.
Have you heard of HubSpot? HubSpot is a CRM platform, so it shares its data across every application. Every team can stay aligned. No out-of-sync spreadsheets or dueling databases. HubSpot, grow better.
Dude, there's this famous meeting that happened in Atlantic City in like 1930s, and that's when it was all the mafia guys that got together, and like Al Capone and all these guys, and that's when they like formed like the syndicate or whatever, you know, like the mob, and like, you know, it's us versus everyone. That's basically what you did. You had like your little mob meeting, and that sounds awesome.
No, I didn't do it. I wanted to do this. I didn't even get there. Why? Because there was one thing that happened, and when we ended up getting acquired by Twitch. Emmett was like, hey, let's grab a drink. We'll celebrate. So we go to this first time I met him, like outside of the office, and we go to this bar and, you know, we're talking about stuff. And I was just like, you know, I was like, what do you think? How would somebody beat Twitch? And he's like, it's pretty hard. We do have like a pretty good business. And like, you know, it's hard to compete against these like marketplaces once they get big.
Did he know about your meeting?
But you know, you could. No. So I go, we had an idea. I don't know if this would have ever worked. We got very close and we didn't pull the trigger ultimately. But I always wondered, like, would this have worked? And I told him the idea. He goes, yeah, we've thought about that. Like that, I don't want to quote him, but like the gist of what he said was, if you were going to do it, that's the only way to do it. But we knew that. And that's why we started signing exclusive contracts with all these guys, and specifically exclusive contracts that don't line up. So we would make one expire in June and another expire in January. Another one expires in the following year. He's like, so that nobody could ever, like, they're all off-cycle payment, all off-cycle contracts, so that nobody could come and like, oh, they're all going to be free agents and we sign them all right away.
Tiny detail,
right? And I was like, wow. And then sure enough, this actually did end up, somebody did try to do this. So Microsoft came out with this thing called Mixer, and they went and they tried to get the top streamers. They gave Ninja like, I don't know, some stupid $20, $30 million to come stream on Mixer. He said yes, because he's like, dude, if I'm making 4 or 5 on Twitch and these guys will give me 30 guaranteed to go sit here for 2 years, all right, I'll do it. And they tell me like, this is integrated with Xbox. It's going to like drive me a bunch of new viewers. Cool. And then they tried to get Shroud and tried to get a bunch of others, but they did it too slowly. And so so this attack did actually end up happening.
But that company went out of business, didn't it?
Yeah, because they couldn't get the critical mass. They couldn't get enough people to say yes. But like this did happen. Like the Chinese streaming platforms tried to do it. Like a whole bunch of people tried to do this against Twitch at the same time. And Twitch did a fairly good job of not only this off-cycle contract thing, but also figuring out, is crazy. There was like this like theory, which was, how many of your favorite streamers need to move before you move? And so they looked at like, okay, if I'm a viewer, if I spend 100% of the time just watching Sam and Sam leaves, okay, I have a high likelihood of leaving. But as long as I can get you to watch like 4 people, the odds of all 4 leaving are very low. And if one leaves, I'm like 95%
Dude,
chance to just stay.
How about the fact that they probably hired some like MIT, like rocket scientist, and he's like thinking for years, like I'm going to help get man to Mars. You know, I'm going to be part of saving the world, the human race. I'm just a little small part of this, but I'm helping. And he gets his job offer from SpaceX and it's $135,000. And then he gets his job offer from Twitch and it's like $140,000. And he's like, yeah, they got free lunch though. Like, you know, like it's like the office is down the street from my house. You know, I can do it. This space thing will always be here, you know, like, their office is beautiful. You know, and then right. They take that Twitch office and then they spend the next 8 years of their lives. And the only point is figuring out how to make it so a streamer can click a button and like a cat pops up on their shoulder, like an emoji. You know what I mean? Or it's like, how do I just make it so like on Monday Night Football, the first the down line, the yellow line moves perfectly with like the, you know, how do I do that? You know, space will always be there though. But like, how do I get this? Like,
right.
Just imagine someone like dedicating their lives to that. That sounds horrible to me.
That is not far from the truth. And in fact, some people try to use that to their advantage. Like, you know, Steve Jobs did that thing where he's like recruiting John Sculley or whatever. He's like, you know, when are you going to stop selling sugar water to kids and come like help change the world? And Scott Harrison, the CEO of Charity Water, he's like, I remember he came to Silicon Valley. He was recruiting for Charity Water. And I was like, how do you recruit from like Google? He was trying to hire somebody from Adobe, I remember. And he's like, yeah, she makes four times as much as I'm going to offer. I'm like, why would she take a huge pay cut like that, like 4x less? He's like, I just got to hope that she wants to do something that actually matters. And like, you know, I was like, well, okay. And he actually did succeed in recruiting a bunch of really interesting people. But yeah, you know, it does happen. Like when you're at these companies, it's like, what percent of your life goes towards like being like, you know, can we get, you know, chat engagement up by 0.2%? Like, can we get the, you know, if I add this emoji of this, like, you know, bouncing cat, like, are you 34% more likely to come back next week? Like, you know, there's a lot of life that comes down to you. If you work a big tech company, you're working inside of a slot machine and you're looking at this like person sitting down on the stool and you're like, can I get another four quarters out of them? Like, what do I need to, let's make that light flash over there. Hey, cherries, you got a flash. Yeah, that'll do it.
My wife, you know, went to this fancy Ivy League school. She's this brilliant woman. And she was at Facebook when we started dating and she was telling me what she does. She's like, I'm a PMM. What's that stand for? Product Marketing Manager. And I was like, what's that mean? She's like, oh, well, we just help people. Like, we want more people to use Facebook. I'm like, oh, are you guys like the thing that puts like the jet above India so like they get free internet access? She's like, oh, no, not really. Well, what do you do? She's like, well, you know, I create different products to help people to use Facebook. I'm like, okay, but what do you really do? She's like, I'm making it so you could put a sticker on your picture and more people will spend just a little bit more time on this app. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, you should quit, right? And like, that's when she quit. She's like, yeah, and went and did something that actually she cared about. But yeah, I remember hearing about that. I'm like, oh, that's why you went into debt for all these universities. And that's why you did all that, was so you can, you know, walk around the Facebook campus for like 3 hours a day and make like a sticker of like Poojean the cat or whatever the fuck that thing was called. Remember that thing, Poojean, or what was that thing? It was like a Japanese cat.
No idea what you're talking about.
It was called like remember how Facebook, they would have all these like Japanese cartoons. There was like that dog with his tongue hanging out. I don't remember. It was a thing. It was like Poojean. It was like a cat that was Asian. And like, it was like a series of stickers that,
yeah, it's the thing in Snapchat, that dancing hot dog, which has been seen more than like any cartoon or animation ever. It's been seen like 10 billion times, or like 100 billion times or something like that. It's like, yeah, this hot dog is actually more popular than Mickey Mouse.
Just like the stupid ways of time. It reminds me of on that TV show Silicon Valley. One of the apps that they said was amazing was Nipple Alert, and it alerts you of erect nipples in your vicinity. I'm like, ah, this sticker thing, that's Nipple Alert. Sounds good.
Yeah. Honestly, when I was there, I didn't think it was like, you know, a waste of sort of time and energy in that sense. Like, I don't know, maybe
I think Twitch is actually okay, because Twitch is like, this is like this cool subculture. We're nerds. No one likes us. We finally have a space that we can do this stuff. Facebook, I think, is different.
And I respected the game theory of it. I was like, when this whole like contract thing was going down and they were like, you know, basically the question of how much should we bid? I was like, I don't know, you know, like, it's like in sports, there's like this money ball movement where you're trying to figure out the value of a player. And if you can accurately forecast the value of a player, you have an edge in winning in the league. The same thing is true now for all these like big media platforms that are like in Twitch's case, you know, they were bidding for content. So they're bidding for this. And, you know, I went and met with people or like, you know, talked to people who are at Netflix, and it's like, hey, how do you decide how much to spend on the production of this? Or you know, how do you figure out if it was worth it to spend, you know, whatever, $100 million on House of Cards? And like, and you go there and you'll meet, you know, you meet the guy who's doing that same thing, right? Like the brilliant data scientist whose like job is to like A/B test the thumbnails of, you know, like the new Garfield movie to figure out which one is going to lead to higher engagement and like lower churn. And it's like, yeah, you know, you're A/B testing thumbnails for Netflix and YouTube and all this stuff. Like, yeah, that's like, it kind of feels like, you know, bringing a gun to a knife fight type of thing. Like damn, like really, this is where all this brain power goes? I know, but
it's a scale. It's not binary. It's a scale, you know? And so for some companies, it's like, oh no, this is just way too lame. For others, it's like, oh, this got a little pinch of lame, a little half a cup of lame, but like it's mostly pretty cool.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Netflix, I actually think that's cool. It's like, oh, I'm giving the world a little bit of entertainment. Facebook, it's like, I'm just making people hate themselves.
Yeah, the thing that the way I ended up thinking about it was, like, do I matter here? Like, if I left, like, who cares? Yeah. I call this the Jenga law. Like, if you remove this block from the Jenga tower, tower's still there. Okay, guess that wasn't a key block. Like, you know, sure, we'd love to have it there. It's better if it's there, but like, nah, nobody really cares if it leaves. It's like, well, if I don't really matter here, then like, it's very hard for me to get excited.
Right, right,
and that's
right.
Kind of an ego thing, but it's also like an impact thing. Like if I, at a startup, like I can just by myself create a product, give value to customers that didn't exist, and I can capture a huge amount of the value. And at a big company, I'm neither the key person creating the value, nor the person who captures any of the value, right? Like your value capture inside of a company is fixed. Like you get paid what you get paid in most cases, you know, aside from like maybe a bonus that you could get, whether your product succeeds or fails, which is why a bunch of products fail or go really slow inside these companies, because it doesn't matter. You don't get a prize if it works. You get praise. And so, and then the other side, which is like, you know, does this matter? And I think there is a counter argument. Like I talked to this guy, Josh Ellman, and actually even the chief product officer at Twitch, this guy, Dan. I was like, Dan, why do you always join, you know, worked at Google, worked at Nextdoor, worked at now Twitch. I was like, why are you doing these big companies? Like, have you ever wanted to go do your own? He's like, yeah, but I wanted like impact, scale. And I was like, oh, that's weird. Like in my head, it was always, if I'm at a small company, I have a bigger impact
because
I am big relative to the company. He's like, yeah, but that's not how you think about it. Like here, if I can improve one product that 10 million people use, or at Google, you know, a billion people use search, you know, every single day. And so if I can make that better, he's like, I created the book search, you know, feature. I was, you know, on the books team, we created that project. So now you could like search for books and like a bunch of people on earth do that. At a startup, it'd be very hard for me to do that. And I was like, okay, like that is the counterpoint, is like, if you're working at Apple and you're working on the App Store, like, you know, the App Store, if a billion people use it every single day, I guess like making that better reaches a billion people, you know, making their life 1% better or whatever, you know, that day is higher impact than at a startup. But it just doesn't feel that way. The action doesn't feel the same to me.
No, I agree. You want to do another topic?
Can I give you a framework that I think is pretty dope that I heard?
Mm-hmm.
So I was talking to somebody about, like, you know, I guess I can't really say what I was talking about, but I was talking about something. It's sort of like, you know, let's say the topic of money, like, you know, should I do this? Should I do this? It's going to yield this amount of money or not. And the person was like, well, the way I think about money is, you know, he goes, the value of money is what can you say no to if you have this money? And I was like, what do you mean by that? Like, that's interesting. I started, he didn't even respond, but I was like, in my head, I was like, that's interesting. I've never heard that before. And so like, I started thinking about it and I go, that's true. Like people always say, you know, I want financial freedom. I want freedom. I don't care about money. I care about freedom. That's like a common thing you'll hear. And it's like, what does that actually mean? I was like, oh, it's actually not the freedom to do something. It's the freedom from having to do something. So it's like, what can I say no to? So let me give you kind of like, so I started thinking about my own life. I was like, when I had $25,000 in my bank account, I could say no to a really shitty job. Like I didn't have to go flip burgers or be a janitor, because I could pay my like monthly bill. And I could do that for like, you know, 6 to 12 months. And like, cool. That means I didn't have to go get a bad job, a shitty job today. But then at like 100K in the bank, you could say no to like a shitty manager. It's like, okay, I can't just retire, but I can like quit this job, take a gap and like find another job. And I don't feel like this like financial stress in doing that. So 100K lets me say no to a shitty manager. I was like, $500,000. That's when I could say no to, like, I don't have to work for a couple of years. I could just say no to work for a little bit, temporarily say no
like
to
work. Like a 6 or 12 month thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I could go for a year. I could try a startup or go backpacking or whatever. Like I could pursue a passion of some kind. So that's a new thing you could say no to, is like work for a little while. Then at kind of like, I would say $3 million, you can just say no to jobs. Like, I'm only going to work for myself. I can bet on myself and give myself enough time to figure stuff out without having to stress about it. At $10 million, I think you just say no to working in general. It's like, all right, like my money makes enough money. I just don't need to use my time to make money if I don't want to. And then it kind of goes on, and I think at 20 million, you say no.
Well, at like I've been thinking about this as well. At like between some number, maybe around 100, you say no to having to be in one location. So, for example, right now I rent a place in one location, and I own a place in another location. If I had $100 million, I'd probably own 3 or 4 homes, and it's just like, hey, let's just go from place to place to place. I don't have to spend any time organizing a rental or anything. And then maybe around like 200 or 300, it's I'm going to say no to wasting time at an airport. I'm just we only fly private.
So I think it's that, but the numbers are a little bit less. I said at 50 million, I think you could say no to any inconvenience that money can solve.
You could. I think you could. Like, but
you could
but
fly you could. Private at 50 million. You don't have to own the jet. You could fly private.
Sure.
You could hire assistants to do anything you need. You can hire, you know, chefs and drivers and you know, errands and accountants, and anything you don't want to do, you don't have to do.
I talked to 50 million range. I talked to a guy the other day who owns a jet, and he said it's about $2.5 million a year in expenses.
Right.
And he owns it. If you want to rent it, I think you could go to a lot of places and spend $500,000 a year. And if you have 50 million, that's doable. But you can't own like an $8 million house in Brooklyn, and then a $3 million house in Austin, and then a $5 million house in LA, but you could own pretty nice shit in those places.
Right. And so, and you know, like the top ladders, you get to 100 million. And I think you could say no to the way the world works. You get to change some rules. And at a billion, I think you say no to like politicians. You say no to the police. You say no to a bunch of people when you get to a billion, because you have the ability to kind of fight back. There's a different level of respect. So to me, I liked this framework of what does this amount of money allow me to say no to that I want to say no to?
Did you, what hourly rate would you say no to right now for a project that you don't want to do for a 1 hour phone call? What would you have to accept?
So there's like what you say, and then there's like what you actually like, what the market clearing price actually is.
So right? you would and right now I charge $2,000 an hour, and I take about 2 hours a week of phone calls. Would you do that or not?
So that's the exact borderline. So on GLG, that's like what you get. The max you can set my rate to is 2,000. And if I get a bid and I'm like, this phone call doesn't sound like it's going to be a lot of fun. It's like right at that borderline where I feel like, I kind of should for an hour. I
don't take the calls because I need the money. I take the calls because I feel guilty saying no. And so
it's the same thing, right? Like feeling like I should means feeling like I want to say no, but I don't think I should. And therefore, if I say no, I kind of feel like I'm guilty, right? Like
what I've done I've used the app Intro, and I just like, for example, I'm flying down to your event, and then I'm flying to LA. I schedule it so I know when I'm going to be
assigned the money.
Well, I know when I'm going to be in the Uber, and I just make my availability there. So I'm like, sick, I'll just take this in the Uber. And now I can afford, like I could justify a $200 Uber Black because I'm making $2,000 in this hour. And so I'm going to be comfortable, and I'll order even early. So if I arrive early at the airport, I can just sit outside of the airport and finish this call. So that's kind of how I've been justifying it now. But it feels weird selling time per hour. And I don't even know if I like that in general.
Yeah, exactly. So I would say my true answer is if I don't want to do it right now, I think that the number is something like $2,000 or $3,000 for an hour. If I don't want to do it, I actually just don't do it. But if it's like borderline, if I'm not sure if I want to do it or I don't think I would like it, but it's not so painful, I think that's my current thing. But I'm actively trying to get away from it. Like, what was it? Something came up yesterday that was like this. And I was like, by default, I was just going to say yes. And I was like, should I say yes to this? Let me just like recheck what I want to be saying yes to, because I think that, you know, one of the most important decisions in your life is what are the things I'm going to say yes to and what are the things I'm going to say no to. So there's your default box, which is like, oh, I obviously say yes and no to these things. Then what are the non-obvious things? So it's like, I want to be saying yes to things that I know will be fun and help me grow, but scare me a little or put me out of my comfort zone. Right. So it's like, I know I want to say yes to that. I know I want to say yes to, if my friend is in town, I want to go pick them up from the airport. Or if my mom needs to get to the airport, I want to drive her there. Like, I want to say yes to tasks that like, I don't want to do, but I actually want to be the person who does those things. So I'm just like, I'm deciding consciously, what are the things that are like, what should I be moving into the yes box? And what should I be moving into the no box? What's some shit I do today that I should be saying no to?
Do you have a polite way of saying no to all the inbound, or do you just ignore?
I used to just ignore. And then I realized like, it's totally fine to just say, hey, this sounds cool, but I just got my hands full. I don't want to do anything else. Or like, hey, this, thanks for reaching out. I don't want to do any more phone calls than I'm doing right now, but if that changes, I'll let you know.
Yeah.
And like, I'll just say something. And I think, you know, people, A, they just appreciate a response more than a blow off. And B, I think there's some level of respect for
thoughtful emails. For like, yeah.
For, you know, somebody just being honest and like just saying, look, I don't want to do that. I've decided I want to travel less, you know? So I'm saying no to travel.
Dude, I had this guy messaging me saying he wants to come on the pod. And I was just like, I ignored it. Cause I hate when people ask to come on because I'm like, dude, why are you going to make me say no? Like I say no to everyone practically, even good friends. Like we just say no to most everyone. And this guy, he was like, he was like, can I come on? I'm a huge fan. And I just said like, thanks for reaching out. Like I tried to avoid it. Like it was quite obvious. And he's like, hey, so can I come on? And I go, you know, this isn't a good fit, but I really appreciate you listening. And he was like, can I get some feedback? I was like, it's just not a good fit. And he goes, okay, but why? And I was like, okay, because you're not interesting and you're not that successful. And he was angry at me. And I was like, dude, what the hell? I mean, I was trying to like, you know, make a point of like avoiding this topic and being kind. But you, if you're going to ask for feedback, and I'm going to tell you, you know, what it's about, don't get angry.
Right.
He's like, well, yeah, what's not interesting about it? He said, I go, it just, there's, you know, I just don't care about you.
So my Goldilocks thing here was I was too cold when I just blew people off because they didn't like that. And then they would just stop like, you know, I found I would miss opportunities because I wouldn't reply to things. Miss opportunities I cared about in the long run. And then the too hot was I would just be like, I don't do phone calls. I was like, okay, you know, you're sort of a jerk for just being like, I don't do phone calls or like, I don't meet with people I don't know. Or like, you know, I don't do this. It's like too hard of a rule. And I found that the sweet spot was somewhere in the middle of just saying, you know, hey, thanks. But you know, I'm trying to do less of this right now. Or sometimes I'll say like, they'll be like, hey, did you want to do this? And I'll be like, you know, I haven't decided. And, you know, like, I don't know. I don't even know what I want yet. So let me get clear on what I want. And then I'll come back if I, you know, when I get clear, if I ever get clear on it. But like, it's not about you. I just don't know exactly what I want to do right now. And like, I'll just say like something honest like that. And I found that tends to work a little bit better.
Dude, we went from Hitler to Saudi Arabia to saying no to people.
Mental models.
Yeah, mental models. Good pod. I'm going to be in LA on Sunday. You're not coming, right?
To LA on Sunday? No, I don't think so.
But then I'm going to see you in the...
What are you going to LA for?
I told you about it. I'm hosting an event there. Dude, for the New York event that I'm hosting, we've got like 1,300 RSVPs. I'm eager to see how many show up.
You got to cut that down, right? You can't do... You're going to do a 1,000-person event?
No, that's how many people said they're coming, but it's free. So like maybe half will come. But we put up 10 grand.
You're going to do a 650-person event?
Dude, it's all
That's
guys,
such an
by the way.
Absurd number.
It's all guys. Yeah. I like scroll through. It's all dudes.
I could smell that event already.
Ugh, yeah. It's fucked up, man. So many Chads are going to be there. And then I'm doing the same thing in LA, and that one has like 500 or 600 RSVPs. You and I were talking about an event, and I was like, kind of like, actually, this was like a toilet decision. And I just wrote it on Eventbrite on my phone and just posted it right away. And people signed up and said, we're committed. So we're doing that. And then we're going to go to the Carolinas for the thing you're organizing, which everyone's been reaching out to me. Did we talk about it last pod?
Yeah, we mentioned at the end of last pod.
Dude, so many people are reaching out.
What did they reach out about?
They want to come. Basically people wanting to come. And I'm like, this isn't, no, sorry. It's not my thing. Yeah. But
so I came up with I was like, what do we call this? And I was like, I want to call it Camp MFM. So it's Camp MFM. And I was like, we could do these, but we could do a bunch of these. We could just do like adult summer camps, basically.
Great
it's
idea.
Like, what is something that's really fun? Cause I don't want to go to something that's like even this like 1,000-person meetup. Like I'm sure it's cool and there's cool
well,
people.
Well, it serves
like,
a different purpose. It's a party versus an experience.
Yeah. So I want to have experiences, you know, when you were like,
yeah.
I'm a fucking artist, man. You know, that's how I am. Like, I don't have experiences.
This is going to be a good one. Like, now we got to come up with another one. Let's go to like hope.
And so some of these will be like this one, which is like ultra, like more like super exclusive, right? There was only supposed to be 12 people going. It's expanded to 24. And, you know, that's a lot. I wanted it to be more like 12, but I'm like, there'll be those. And I think we should do some that are for like, dude, if you can, like, if you know the phrase, you know, we don't do public math, manifest cowboys, you know, Sam wants to own a lake. Like, if you know the inside jokes of this pod, then that's your admittance into this camp. And I was like, I think we should do these like twice a year that are just like fun and awesome and get people together.
Or quarterly.
I think Camp MFM should be the thing. I never wanted to do the work for this, and neither do you. And so that's like, you know, one of the challenges. But
it wasn't a lot of work for this one, was it?
I kind of feel like it is. This is a lot. Because as soon as I try to do something, I'm like, well, let's make it fucking awesome then. Like, you know, and so like all of a sudden, like for this basketball thing, we got like Nike's giving us all like sneakers, like from like one of their players. And like we're getting like custom swag. We rented these like dope Airbnbs. We got like a chef. We got like all this stuff coming together. I was like, well, if we're going to have good people, let's get like some like good names in here. Let's get like some people we're excited to meet. And then it's all coming together. And like, but like each one of those now, I'm like, now I want it to be like awesome if we're going to do
dude,
it.
Dude, we can get a sponsor to say like, all right, you get $300,000 a year to do cool shit, but we get to be there at all the events.
Yeah. Okay. If somebody wants to do sponsor Camp MFM, you can do this. All the money will go to basically hiring a planner to actually like do these things for us. And secondly to you know, the venue and logistics of it.
All right. That's a pod. I'm out.